Hey everybody, it's Dave Dugdale, learningvideo.com, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Hey, enjoy.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 40. What do you do when your photos are stolen? In this episode, a photographer sues Twitter over copyright infringement, Leica has a curious new underwater camera, what's up with those green dots and more on Nikons? A photographer dies while on assignment in Africa. Fujifilm may get back into the medium format business. And listener Mark in California wants to know what's up with exposure compensation dials. All that and more in episode 40 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Dave, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it. Since many of us are using our cameras to also shoot video these days, I think you would really enjoy the work of Dave Dugdale. I believe it's hands down the most fun way to learn the ins and outs of shooting video with your otherwise stills camera. Doug's a great guy, and I think you're all going to get a lot out of his amazing videos over at learningvideo.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 40 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes, or wherever else you listen to us. And we also greatly appreciate you telling all your friends about us as well. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. If you've ever tried to get your photos removed from a website or social media outlet, you know how much of a pain in the butt that can be. Even when filing a properly formatted DMCA takedown notice, it's often difficult to get your stuff removed. And that's what's happened with a photographer who's fighting Twitter. The website Torrent Freak reports that Wisconsin-based photographer Jennifer Rondinelli Riley filed her complaint in federal court in California this week, claiming that after discovering her photo being shared on Twitter, she sent 28 notices to the social media giant about a number of infringements. Now, allegedly, Twitter acted on some of them, but 50 of the 56 infringements were not taken down, so she filed the complaint. At the center of the lawsuit is a piece called Red Lips and Microphone, which Riley is selling as a fine art print online. The photographer says that in one instance, the piece was taken and modified for use in a promotion for an annual event at the University of North Texas, and as of this recording, those posts were still publicly available on Twitter. Here in the United States, under the DMCA, that's the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, a company such as Twitter can protect itself from the actions of its users under the Safe Harbor provision. But to be protected under that provision, they need to actually remove the infringing works. Otherwise, they could be held liable. The lawsuit states, quote, Twitter had actual knowledge of the infringing uses. Riley provided notice to Twitter in compliance with the DMCA, and Twitter failed to expeditiously disable access to or remove the infringing uses. Twitter acted willfully. Alternatively, Twitter directly infringed Riley's copyrights by continuing to allow public access to the infringing uses on Twitter's servers. End quote. And as I said, as of this recording on Wednesday, January 20th, 2015, some of Riley's works are still accessible on Twitter. So despite being notified, despite the lawsuit, and despite this having gone public for days now, her copyrighted works are still on Twitter. The photographer is asking for both actual and statutory damages, and since her images are still up on the service after all this exposure, it would appear that she has a pretty strong case. But I'm not a lawyer, though. If you're a Nikon user and have wondered or forgotten what those two green dots are on your camera, and like me, prefer to think of the manual as a book of last resort, now is perhaps a good time to talk about those green dots, the red format logo, and a really good tip for saving your bacon when things go south. On many Nikon bodies, the green dots are there to allow you to quickly do a factory reset. You press them both at the same time, and you must hold them down for a few seconds to make this happen. Thanks to these necessary steps, it's virtually impossible to do a factory reset accidentally, so don't worry about that in case you were. In a poll we're running on Petapixel, we asked, did you know about Nikon's two-button reset feature already? As of this recording, more than 2,400 people have taken the poll and answered as follows. The majority, 41%, said, no, I didn't know what the dots were for. 31% said, no, I didn't realize there were dots. 16% said yes, but I've never used it, and 12% said yes, and I've used it before. So most people didn't know what the green dots mean. Now, of course, not everyone who took the poll is or was a Nikon user, so it's hard to say for sure. But in my experience, most aren't familiar with the dots, nor why it'd be a good idea to use them. If you're buying a Nikon camera used, or any camera actually, doing a factory reset is generally recommended. Bring it back to a zeroed out position and start fresh. For one, someone else's settings aren't necessarily ideal for you. And if they've entered their name and contact info in the copyright section of the camera, those will be attached to any photos you shoot from there on out. So you'll want to make sure that that doesn't happen, of course. Now here's a huge tip that a friend gave me years ago, which has saved my bacon on more than one occasion. Bacon. All right, I digress. And that tip is saving your camera settings to a spare media card. Now, this isn't something that you'd normally think of, and I know I didn't, but I don't think that the manuals push this tip strong enough, and it's really, really important, and it saves you a lot of time. You know, it can take hours to set up your camera the first time. And of course, over time, you're going to be tweaking those settings as you figure your camera out, and how you shoot is going to change over that time period. So what happens if your camera flips out on you and becomes unusable? My go-to has always been to quickly do a factory reset. Now, most of the time, that fixes the issue, but then your camera isn't set up properly. It doesn't have your settings that you spent many, many hours figuring out and dialing in. So what do? If you know your camera well enough, you can get the key settings back to where they were in seconds. And as a photojournalist, I've had to do that. But if you have a little bit more time, being able to pop in a memory card with your settings data is a huge time saver. And since that data doesn't take up a whole lot of space, just find an old, smaller capacity card that you're no longer using, save your settings to it, you're going to have to look in your manual to see how to do this, and you're good to go. Then if your camera goes rogue on you, you quickly do a factory reset, pop that card in, load your settings, pop it out, put in another card to shoot to, and more times than not, you'll be up and running again in no time. Over the years, I've had to do this on a number of occasions, and it has been a lifesaver. Now, it's really important that you mark this card among your others so you don't accidentally shoot to it. You want to make sure that you know which card is your settings card. So, I don't know, get a Sharpie and put a big S on it or draw on it or do something so you know which card it is. This is a huge tip. At some point, you may need to do a factory reset, and having to remember what your favorite settings were can be a real pain. And a huge time waster. I know that personally, I don't have that kind of time. Now, if you don't have an old low-capacity card, they are so easy to find. Amazon.com, your local convenience store, Walmart, Costco, wherever, they have them so cheaply these days. So you can definitely find one out there. Or maybe you have a friend that has an old 4-gig card that you can have. Now, in addition to the green dots, on Nikons, you're also going to see a pair of red logos which say format on them. These are for quickly formatting the card or cards in your camera. It's faster than drilling through the menus, and experts generally agree that it's preferable to format your cards in the camera rather than on a computer. That reduces the chance of corruption greatly. And I can attest to this. That's happened to me before. So I don't think I've ever had a problem with a card formatted in the camera body, but I have when doing it with a computer. Now, of course, there's always picking up the manual and finding out what these mysterious green dots and red logos and other things are. So maybe crack it open once or twice a year or so. Familiarize yourself with what your camera can do, and I think you're going to get a whole lot more out of it. In episode 39, we reported on Reporters Without Borders' campaign to draw attention to the work of war photographers. Well, it's with great sadness that I report that French-Moroccan photographer Leila Alaoui has died. On Friday, January 15, 2016, Alaoui sustained critical injuries she received during an Al-Qaeda terrorist attack in the African nation of Burkina Faso. She was 33 years old. Amnesty International says the photographer was wounded in the leg and thorax during a siege while parked outside of a cafe there. She was then taken to a local hospital where she had a heart attack days later and died this past Monday, January 18, 2016. Eloy's photos focused on themes of migration, identity, and cultural diversity. She worked to share social realities by combining fine art with documentary storytelling and was on assignment by Amnesty International to create a series of photos on women's rights. Layla Eloy, dead at 33. RIP, sister. Doctors and dentists, listen up. Leica has officially announced its first rugged underwater camera, the XU. And to entice you, the sample photos were all shot in the desert. Yeah, that's pretty high concept, I think. The Leica XU Type 113 is the very first Leica designed specifically for extreme outdoor and underwater shooting. Being that it's fully waterproof down to 49 feet, it's shock resistant, freeze resistant, and it's dust sealed. Now, apparently it can survive falls of, get this, up to 3.9 feet. But that's okay, because apparently doctors and dentists stay pretty close to the ground. So, 3.9 feet, that's all they're going to need. Now, I'm joking, of course. That's not exactly rugged, but 3.9 feet? Come on, Leica. Under the hood is a 16.5 megapixel APS-C size crop sensor, and up front is a bright Leica Summilux 23mm f1.7 ASPH lens. Now, around back is a large 3-inch LCD screen that's protected by a hardened protective cover, and the battery and memory card are sealed from the elements with a fail-safe double locking system. It also features an underwater snapshot button that makes it easy to capture photos with a simple press of the shutter button without having to work through all the settings and menus. This camera was designed in collaboration with Audi Design, and it's geared towards being both stylish and minimalist. Hey, when you're underwater, it's really important to impress the other doctors and dentists with your really fancy, stylish camera. You know what I'm saying? I know, I'm joking. But hey, when you're underwater, you don't want to be fumbling with a bunch of buttons and dials, so minimalist is definitely the way to go. Now, the shell is made of aluminum and anti-slip material. The control dials are also metal, of course, and there's a built-in flash which is positioned right above the lens, because that's where you need it when you're underwater. As for video, the Leica XU can shoot 1080p and 720p video at 30 frames per second in MP4 format, so that's not very exciting. Those aren't exactly topped-out video specs. As you might expect, though, with the introduction of an underwater camera, the sample photos were, of course, shot in a desert. Because that somehow makes a lot of sense. I don't get Leica sometimes, but I don't know what they're going for here. Anyhow, if you're interested in this camera, it'll be available sometime at the end of January 2016 for $2,950 US. Fujifilm announced a whole lot of cool new gear at CES 2016. And now, thanks to the British Journal of Photography, we're learning that the company may once again be dabbling in the medium format market. Now, you may remember that Fujifilm once produced medium format cameras back in the film days, but since the advent of digital, the company has chosen to focus on smaller formats. But according to Fuji's X-Series senior product manager, Takasaki Yuno, the company has quite a few technologies that may do well in a new medium format body, saying, quote, "We are in a very good position to make a medium format camera, as we make camera bodies, sensors, and lenses. We already make the lenses for Hasselblad, so we have that expertise. At the moment, Fuji is not planning to launch a medium format camera, but we are conducting research and testing sensors in this area. We have a good history in the medium format market, and I think we would be successful again." End quote. All right, reading the tea leaves here, Fujifilm seems likely to enter the medium format business again at some point. They're looking into it, they're spending dollars on it, they have ability to do so, and they're doing quite well with their mirrorless systems, so why not, right? He went on to say, quote, "We have the technology to make a very modern and high-quality camera, but right now we are only investigating," end quote. You know, I wouldn't at all be surprised to see a Fujifilm medium format system sometime in 2017. Stay tuned. Since you listen to this podcast, you know that I'm not the super patient type. I try, but I'm not. What can I say? Thus why I don't do a whole lot of wildlife photography. But if I did, I'd want to do it right, and that often means that, like with hunting, you want to be hidden to the greatest extent possible. And that's what the new Lens Hide from Lenscoat seeks to do. It's a portable blind for wildlife photography that helps you become as invisible as is reasonably possible to the wildlife that you're shooting. Well, photographing, not shooting. That's a different kind of shooting, right? LensCoat, makers of all kinds of products for disguising and protecting your gear, calls their lens hide, quote, the best engineered portable blind in the market, end quote. It's designed to be ultra portable as it weighs just 2.5 pounds. And if you've seen shooting blinds before, you get the idea of how this thing works. It slides over you, your camera, lens, and tripod, and since the material is breathable and there's also a camo mesh window, getting the air that you need is not a problem. The portion for your head has Velcro so you can keep it tightened around your head, and an elastic cinch strap on the front to secure it to your lens barrel. Now, if you're shooting with a flash and better beamer to get that light downrange further, you'll be happy to hear that there is, of course, a cutout for your flash to attach to your camera. If you'd like to be less visible when practicing your wildlife photography, or you'd like to just hide in the woods, you can pick up a lens hide for $120 US in either tree or snow varieties right now from LensCoat.com. Now, one thing I don't get is how do photographers and hunters not get shot at while using these things? You know, I mean, there's some dumb hunters out there of the Elmer Fudd variety. So how do you not get shot? I don't get it. So if you're using one of these, take all precautions and keep yourself safe, please. If you want an Olympus OMD EM10 Mark II, but don't want to pay the $600 it costs to get one, you can now download and print one for yourself. Okay, so it's not going to take photos, and when it gets wet, it's going to run. But if you have kids or grandkids, I think they'll like the printable cameras available from Olympus. The company has created a family-friendly webpage for kids, and in one of those sections called Papercraft, currently has two printable PDF files of cameras. One for the OMD EM10 Mark II, and the other is the smaller Olympus Pen Light EPL7. Kids will definitely have fun printing these out and putting them together. But if you do this, you might want to use the thickest paper that your printer is able to use so that they hold their shape better. All right, it's clearly a slow news cycle if I'm doing a story on paper cameras. But hey, the kids will enjoy this. And I may or not have printed one out myself. I think we both know that that means that I did. Hey, it's sitting on my shelf. It looks kind of cool. What can I say? Today's listener question comes from Mark in California, who sent in his question via our voicemail widget.
Hey, Snarky. Wait, did that just happen? Let's move on. Hey, Sharky. My name's Mark, and I'm a huge fan of your show. I've listened to everyone and just love them and really appreciate everything you're doing. In the 70s, I'm in my 60s now. In the 70s, I cut my teeth on a Nikon F. Two, which, as you know, had two, maybe three dials on it total. I got out of photography for many years and came back to it about 11 years ago, and things were really starting to change. And now my A7 has more dials and buttons and menus than I know what to do with half the time. But one thing has always really confused me, and that is the exposure compensation dial. I don't understand what the point is. Is there a difference between the exposure compensation dial on the top of my camera and just reaching down and resetting my aperture or my shutter speed or my ISO? I don't know. Tell me. Thanks, Snarky. Sharky.
Thank you so much for your question, Mark. I greatly appreciate it. You know, I love fun questions like this. Listening to them as they come in is a great deal of fun. Now, some of them I can't play here on the podcast and maintain our clean rating. And you all know who you are, cheeky monkeys in the UK. Okay, on your question, Mark. The exposure compensation dial, or on some cameras, it's a button press and turning of the dial, is confusing to a lot of people. You know, it perplexed me a bit because, like you, I came from the world of film cameras and didn't have that until I moved from a Nikon FM2 up to the awesome F4S. As I recall, that had plus or minus two stops of compensation via a dial on the right-hand side. And I believe my old Canon EOS 1 had it via a plus and minus button. You had to press that and turn a thumb dial. All right, so here's the point of exposure compensation. And that is that if you're in one of the priority modes, let's say aperture priority, for example, and you've got your aperture dialed in to, say, f2.8, your camera then calculates the exposure based on the other two legs of the exposure triangle, which is shutter speed and ISO, of course. And then what you get more times than not is a decent exposure, or at least hopefully you do. But reaching for that exposure compensation dial on your Sony A7 will essentially override what your camera has decided on, and there are very good reasons why you'd want to do this. For instance, let's say that you're in a run-and-gun situation where the lighting is changing on you, but you know that you'd like to underexpose your images by one stop. Rather than having to go into manual mode and have it be hit or miss, something that most photographers are frankly uncomfortable with, stay in aperture priority mode, let the camera do the heavy lifting for you, and dial in minus one stop of exposure compensation. So it takes whatever the camera sees at that time based on, you know, what the lighting is in front of your camera, and then applies minus one stop of exposure adjustment to that. Now, in this example, you're in aperture priority mode, and let's say you've chosen an aperture for shallow depth of field, f2.8, f1.8, whatever your lens can do. That minus one dialed in will adjust your shutter speed. Without exposure compensation, let's say your camera is wanting to give you a shutter speed of 1/250th of a second. So with minus one dialed in, it'll now give you 1/500th of a second. It quickens your shutter speed by one stop, thus darkening or underexposing your images by one stop. Now, conversely, if you're in shutter priority mode, dialing in minus one of exposure compensation on that dial is going to adjust your aperture accordingly. To give you one stop less of exposure via your aperture, it stops it down. Now, for those of you who are fairly new to photography, what this means is the shutter blades will constrict and give you a smaller opening for which light can pass through. So if your camera wanted to give you a nice big f2.8 opening, you'd now be getting f4 instead, since you've got that minus one dialed in. Now, if you're in manual mode, of course, you might as well just adjust your settings accordingly, and hopefully you know enough about photography to make that happen. And that's why it's really important to get to know your camera and get to know how the exposure triangle works and what happens when you stop down your aperture, what happens when you open it up, quicken your shutter speed, slow it down, etc. When I was a working photojournalist, I'd use exposure compensation quite often. I preferred, of course, to be in manual mode when the lighting was under my control or wasn't changing. But in other scenarios, when you're running gunning it, exposure compensation gives you the power to overexpose or underexpose at will, depending on what you need out of the images. Now, if you mess around with it in the appropriate situations, I think you're going to find that this is quite powerful, Mark. For instance, let's say that you're photographing someone and the sun is behind them, it's rapidly going down, and you need to get your shots without messing around with your settings constantly. That exposure compensation dial is going to be your best friend. So you put yourself in one of the priority modes, you take a shot, and you're overexposed a bunch. What do? You know, your subject is in silhouette, but not quite as much as you would like. So you dial in minus one on exposure compensation, and you see what you get. If it's not enough, dial in minus two, then keep on shooting if that's good. Give it a try sometime, and I think you're going to find really good reasons to use exposure compensation. But here's the caveat. When you're done shooting, remember to set the exposure compensation dial back to the zero position, or you're hosed next time. I can't tell you how many times that I've forgotten that, and then didn't realize my error until I took the first photo at the next shoot. You know, to avoid these things from happening, I usually pre-flight my gear. But on the occasions where I forget to reset my dial and forget to pre-flight my gear, no bueno. Bad things happen, and hopefully not in critical situations. So it's very important to make sure you're mindful of what you're doing and what your camera is set at before you actually start shooting, especially if it's critical. Thank you so much for having fun with your question, Mark. I greatly appreciate it, and I hope this helped you out. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 40 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 41. Well, it's f8 2/50th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.